Yeah, you can grab the feeling when you're coming to other, to Aboriginal culture. Yeah, I've seen many came to me and told me we had that feeling.
G'day, Anthony James here. This is The Regeneration, exploring the stories that are changing the story, enabling the regeneration of life on this planet. That was highly respected Bunuba elder here in Fitzroy Crossing, Jimmy Dylan Andrews. Where last week's episode with Nat Davey took months to pull together, this one took years in a way. Jimmy and I were set to meet 2 years ago when we were last in Fitzroy Crossing, but he fell ill, so we had to postpone. But further back than that, it was an old mate in Broome, an accomplished bloke himself, Bruce Goring, who first sent me Jimmy's way. So this time, with Jimmy in good nick, we met up for what was an incredibly special conversation. Jimmy Dylan Andrews is the founder of Bunguli Tours, nationally renowned for the cultural experiences it guides people through. These include journeys deep beneath the limestone of Napier Range into Tunnel Creek and through the heart of the incredible Wingina Gorge, carved from a 350 million-year-old Devonian reef. The spiritual significance of these places to the Bunuba people is immense, having tended all this for at least 46,000 years. They're also central to the legend of famed Aboriginal warrior Jandamara. Jimmy is a descendant of Jandamara and describes him as a man of magical power. The story of Jandamara is one of this country's most gripping and important ones that still too few of us know about. So we're fortunate to hear Jimmy share it here, along with some other stories foundational to this country, even extending to my footy club and of course to the extraordinary flood this year. We go on to explore the keys to his enterprise success and his visions for the future. All with Jimmy's unhurried, quietly spoken gravitas, as if whispering long accrued secrets of country. Before we start, I want to thank Jimmy's good friend, Patrine McCrowan, for introducing us. Patrine was a guest on the podcast last time we were at Wingina Gorge, and that episode, number 106, is still the sixth most popular listen, drawing dead equal with last week's guest Natalie Davey. Patrine describes Jimmy to me as a great man, standing with dignity, integrity, and vision. She also continues her terrific work, so more on that next time. I also want to say thanks for the rest of the support that has come in since we left the Kimberley back in August. Huge thanks to Jane Sutherland and Izzy Flook for your generous subscriptions, and Jane for committing to a year with yours, alongside Steve Ressam, Vicky, and Nicole. Thanks also to longtime subscriber Mark Cowald for committing to a third year of your support, and to Lean Enterprise Australia for your generous donation. Thank you all very much. It's what makes this ad-free, freely available podcast possible. If you're also finding value in this, please consider joining Jane, Izzy, Steve, Vicky, Nicole, Mark, and the folk at Lean Enterprise Australia with as little as $3 a month or whatever amount you can and want to contribute. You can enjoy a variety of benefits like some behind-the-scenes footage from me, discounts to events like the Reconnection Festival in Byron Bay next month, and of course you'll continue to receive the podcast every week. Just head to the website via the show notes, regeneration.com/support. And thanks again. Okay, let's join Jimmy on a now dry patch of the Mardawarra Fitzroy Riverbed by the old Fitzroy Crossing.
Jimmy, thanks for having us on your country. It's terrific to be with you. And thanks for speaking with me. You've just been out at Yiramalay, you were saying.
Yes, yeah.
What were you doing out there?
Doing cultural awareness with 25 students from Wesley College, Melbourne.
What happens when you do those programs? What do you actually do?
Well, we talk about history and took them to special places where I tell them about the connection we got with the land especially near the place where I was going, and a place called Joey. It's right in the middle of the Oscar Range. Beautiful place, a swimming hole, and it's just spring fed. And they talk about the, we call Ngarangani. Ngarangani in my language is watching rock art painted on the thing.
Right. I wonder how you see it affect them. How do the students feel going through this?
Well, when they come to, you know, most of them never been up in the Kimberley. Yeah, they were really touched by it. At first we went to the old station I grew up at, old Leopold Station, and then we came on to a big paddock there, we call the, it's still standing there, and we pulled up and I said, this is, got a lot of history here. This way in the 50s, my Bunuwa elders used to walk the bullock down to Fitzroy Crossing at the old crossing there, you probably near the entrance of the town.
Yeah.
You probably saw that old ramp there, that's the old trucking yard. And they were amazed of, you know, they're still standing there, the old bullock gate, which I learned. And we come through here, and most of my people used to walk through Joey, the place now, the swimming hole, rock art, and then walk straight across to Oscar Homestead. It's right in there. When you're looking from here, you can see the Oscar Range from here. Homestead was built in the 1800s. The old ruin there is still standing there today with stone and things very similar to Limaloo.
What are your feelings about those, I guess, more recent histories and stories in your family, in your life?
Well, a little bit different from when I was growing up on a cattle station, and then we had to go to the mission there, just not far from here, for schooling and things. And sometime we have May and August holiday, go out to station, but I couldn't go out at the time. This was in the late 50s, because we only had Comer, the old Comer truck. I don't know if you've seen those Comer trucks.
No.
And the old international truck and the old Houston, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, I don't know if any of that around the old Comer we had, and the road was too rough. So I had to spend all my May and August holiday here in Fitzroy with my mother's family. My mother and I, when we first walked, you heard about the stolen generation at Mullabulla?
Yeah.
Walked from there to Christmas Creek Station, just not far from here, with two of my grandfather, three uncle, and three of my, well, we call them auntie mother. Yeah.
Before that, do you know where you were born?
Mullabulla.
Mullabulla.
Yep.
Does that still feel like a special place?
No, I haven't been there for...
Really?
Never went back there, yeah. I grew up in Bunuwa country with my Bunuwa father when I was about six, and he, more like my dad, and he raised me, clothed me, fed me, and looked after me, yeah.
How would you describe your dad? What are your memories of him?
Oh, he was a very talented man. He held the key of the Bunuwa culture, and he was also a composer in his own right.
Really?
Yeah, I got all the song from him here and here.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, for that particular area.
And these are the places you now take people back to?
Yes.
As part of Bunguli tours as well?
Yeah, and where I take them to other member of my family, the Ngalara group, that's where the country is for the Ngalara group, and most of them in town, in Derby. But the old custodian elder, he worked a lot with my dad, and he was the holder of the book called Janamara, written by an English auditor,
yeah,
Howard Peterson,
yep.
And the old custodian elder was Banjo Wurrumara.
Yeah.
And he was a key of keeping the Janamara story alive, and They work together, all the Bunuba elders here.
You hold that story too, as I understand, hey? That,
yes.
As a descendant of Jundamara.
Yeah, it's a really tragic story about a young man torn in two worlds. Sad.
Yeah, not many Australians know this story still, hey?
No, even when I'm coming there and you tell them to take them as sex spot, what it took place and what happened there. Most of them went going back with tears in their eye because they said he was a, like I said, a great man was torn in two worlds, no?
Yeah.
Once he was working for the police, and after he fought the police for his homeland and his people.
Yeah. It's interesting to think that when it was written up as a book, I think it became a play too, didn't it?
Yeah.
And even the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, I think, played the music. Yeah. So it became this huge thing, and there was a film too, wasn't there, that screened on SBS, which was excellent. So it became this national thing, but still so few people know about it. It might be worth recounting a bit more detail, I guess, especially how it relates to the places where you take people to share this story, the Gorge and Tunnel Creek and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to share a bit of what you share with people in those places?
First, take them to where, mainly, that was his main hiding place. He hid there for nearly, his warfare lasted for 3 years at Tunnel Creek, and it was a very special place. We call him Jimuluru in Bunuba, and very special because when Janamara was introduced to a fellow called William Lukun in the 1800s, he had two stations, Lukun Station and Leonard River. This was in the 1800s, and he was more like a shepherd. He's the one who introduced sheep into Wingina Gorge right back here. In the 1800s, it was all sheep, and then later on, they found out that a few years later, it was John and Alexander Horace rode through there to Wingina Gorge, and sometime they used that passage as a path going to Windham. And another path was at Carpenter's Gap near Wingina Gorge. They used that for drovers, bullock team, and musters going through there to Glenroy, Manthouse, and then to Gibb River and up to Windham. And that was there when Janamara was introduced to Richardson by his mother. And then William Lukun was, not Richardson. And then William Lukun had compassion for him, and he put him on the guide of another Aboriginal bloke called Jim Crow. Jim Crow was a mentor for the Bunuba Unkumi people at that time, learning them about how to break in a horse, stockwork, fencing, and all that. And he, the one who taught Janamara a lot. And Janamara was really picked up a lot of skill. Staying there nearly till he was about 16, and he was taken to this culture by his tribal elders and thing, yeah.
Then he ends up working for Richardson.
Yeah.
The lieutenant, I think he was.
Yes,
he?
Yeah.
At the time. And in this prison, which there are still the remains of as well.
Yes.
Little Malura.
Yeah.
Where he had this fateful night.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, it was towards, there were about, still in the 1800s, there were about 15 elders, Janamara's own kin. This was his own kin. They were wanted by the police in Derby, and they this group went to a place called Wire Spring, still in the Oscar Range, and that's a gathering place for men folk only. We call it Murulua, Wire Spring, and a special place. And there, when they go there, you'll see it very special, really, really special. And men used to go there, discuss the Bunuba culture, about songline, dance, and song, and all about that. And they were gathering and trying to teach the other would-be elders and the young men about the structure of the Bunuba culture. And then the police sent out Janamara and Richardson. They camped at Limaluru, Colum, and then probably they had run a lonely campfire. It was there when Janamara probably said to Richardson, "Look, I know the place my uncle used to take me there many times, and we're going to get them by surprise. Tomorrow, you and I saddle up and take off at first light when it's dawn breaking. And guess what? What a surprise Janamara had with his elders. He gave them a big surprise. Even the great Ilamara, his uncle, didn't have time to run. They were stunned. And round them up, put the chain around their neck, and walked them back to Limaru. And there at Limaru, Richardson was so happy with getting the 15 of the Bunuba elders, the most wanted men. And Ilamara was a great leader. He could communicate with any language, with the Ngarinyan, Onkumi, people along the Gib River Road and down along the Fitzroy Riverside with Walmajeri, Mangala Nyigana. He was a great leader and communicated with anyone, but Janamara caught his uncle by surprise there. And he was there sitting down in chain at Limaluru, and there they were singing Junba, trying to uplift his spirit, and singing the first night. The second night here, my friend Janamara Richardson was caught in two worlds. One with his tribal elders, another his friend and partner, Constable Richardson. And here they were still arguing, but Richardson was too busy drinking. He was excited with the catch he had. He did not know what was going on. Here the Bunuba elder, probably Ilamara, told him, "Look, I'm your uncle. I'll raise you, I grew you up, and we are your family right here. And we looked after you. Your mother didn't grow you up, I did. I put you through the Bunuba law, and here, all your brother-in-law here." And this went on for several nights. Richardson didn't know, he was too busy drinking. On the 31st of October, I think, 1894, Janamara shot Richardson. And when he picked up the 44 Winchester, he held it up like this and said, "Kromiani, Milenja Ngandiji." He said, "My countrymen, you see this? Thoroughly warway, Yarungo Moe." He said, "We shall stand strong for our country with this, the 44 Winchester." And this warfare lasted for 3 years. You couldn't get him for 3 years. Because he knew the country and he planted real well. Because at a place not far from Lillamaru, a place called Carpenter's Gap, that used to be the main track from drovers coming from Glenroy, because it was about 2 weeks later the two drovers came, Mark and Frank Burke and Mark Gibbs. They came down with about 500 head of cattle. Water, this was the only water all at Winjana Gorge. And he was there up on the hill. We were watching from the stone nearby. You see the white stone in the middle. And they had about five average stock one with him. And Mark Gibbs went over to the sand near the rock. He lay down like this time and holding the reins in his hand. The average stock one, there were about five of them. They were arguing over the fresh track they saw. And they went over to tell Mark Gibbs, and they said, "That track looked like Janamara. There's a fresh one." Mark Gibson, old station hand and who knew Janama real well, said, ah, Janama will be away, probably running in the middle of the Oscar Range.
Hmm.
And guess what? Suddenly Janama appeared from the right rock, and Mark Gibson, no, you wouldn't shoot me, Janama. Bang. Shot him right there.
Mm.
I mean, Frank Burke, Mark Gibbs was going to gallop away with a horse. He pulled him down with a .44 Winchester. And then that was his turning point for to help his people, and that lasted for 3 years.
Yeah.
But all the time he was really, he was a wise young man, but you know, when the road train, or when the wagon train came in, he was up on the hill, had his elders with him, and they saw the sawdust coming, even from Derby Way, and get all the supplies.
Mm.
That's how he lasted for nearly 3 years.
And he developed this reputation as being almost a ghost because they couldn't catch him, eh?
Yeah.
Because he just knew all those crevices in the gorges and tunnels and stuff.
Yes, yeah.
So how did he eventually get caught or tracked down?
Well, they were trying to, even at the time, the police was trying to figure out how they can get this young man. They probably, you know, said to some other remaining Bunuba, we'll give you a lot of tobacco, shirt, trousers, blanket. That's the only time they can give them at that time. And then they finally told him, Janama is a Jalunguru, a man with spiritual power. And the only one you can get him is someone with the same spiritual power. And they found one. His name was Mickey, Mingo Mick, from the Injibwini tribe, from Rovan.
Huh.
And he came and that this was towards the end of his three years of battle. Mainly with him was his wife, because that was the first problem he had. The elders drove him out because of the wrong skin he had. That played a real major role in our culture. And their gentleman wife, they were still loyal to him when he was on that. They're the one who played the most key role of his life. They're the one who told the police he went this way. Probably said to went to Oscar, but he was there right in the Tunnel Creek all the time, and they fed him with food and medicine and everything. And yeah, they played a tiny role, but when Mingo Mick came this way towards the end of his life, they surrounded him at a place called Wires, at a place called 6 Mile, near Tunnel Creek, and then it was late in the evening. When it was late toward then they surrounded him, and Mick shot him on the leg tie. And he fell down near the bulrushes there, not far from the spring. It was then Joseph Bly, who owned this, at that time owned this crossing India and Brooking Spring. And he said to Mickey, what happened to a gentleman? Oh, he's over there, he's shot. Well, I'll just go and see him. Well, he wanted to finish him off with a .45 revolver at a close range. When he wanted to pull the trigger, Janama turned, he was on his stomach, see? Turned and blew his thumb right off on the gun. And then Janama ran toward the Dingo Gap, toward the back tunnel, and then it was late in the evening. Mickey couldn't track him down, but they went early next morning, and they followed a trail blood of him.
Mm.
Then he was up on the hill, and that's where Mickey shot him.
Mm.
He rode with he went with the two station hand, and the two station hand just left Mickey right out of the scene right there.
Really?
They said, we killed him.
Wow.
Very sad, and you know?
Yeah.
And what I tell my client with me, I said, this had happened 100 years ago when you and I wasn't here, but we must gotta move on. And what been done, we cannot undone, but we can in the better future of building the relationship and sharing this big white brown land between black and white. That's my message.
Really? Is that a big part of why you started Bunguli Tours?
Yeah.
To invite people into these stories and with that message?
Yeah.
When you share those stories, I mean, you said before he was a man of spiritual power. That seems to be an essential part of your stories in general and your culture. How do you communicate that to white fellas? How do you describe that power?
Well, most of them, I think, are starting to understand what's... And most of them are being with, you know, throughout across Australia. Doesn't matter where you go. South Australia, Queensland, they all got this understanding of Aboriginal culture and spiritual power of things. And I think they understand what I'm talking about. Because Mickey had the same spiritual power.
Yeah.
And that's how the people would understand about that. Yeah. At first, I had a problem. I thought I had a problem, but slowly keep working on it, and yeah.
So is that something you think's changed or changing, that white fellas are starting to understand this more?
Yes, yeah. Slowly they are, and really, you know. Well, looking at with the... I never played AFL, but I'm looking at that, and I think bloke like Kevin Seeley coming up here to Broome, and I think he played a major role of helping Aboriginal people, getting them, especially the players there, you know?
Yeah.
And it changed a lot, and you can see, and down here with the new bridge going on, some of the boss and CEO asked me to do some cultural awareness with them in the near future, yeah.
Oh, good.
And this is what I'm saying. We're going to work together to build Australia.
Yep. I'm an Essendon Bombers fan, so I sort of hear that with a bit of pride. It was while they were getting recruited to the Bombers, and there's so many Essendon jumpers that people wear around here as a result, isn't there?
Yeah.
The kids of today, right through the Northern Territory.
Yeah. Well, he played, you know. He even came out to Broome there a couple of years ago, and people surrounded him, and, you know, thank you.
Goes to show, doesn't it? Wow.
Yes, yeah.
And you mentioned that where the stories used to be passed on and how the stories were passed on to you and the songs were passed on to you.
Yeah.
That's something I imagine you're doing with next generations.
Yes, I'm finding it hard, especially with my family, try to pass it on slowly, but we're still working at it, you know. I'm going to take them out, hopefully, and most of the time I've spent here, but I want to get back to my homeland and take them to these various places where... Even at the place now, you know, where gentlemen were sort of in the tie, it was, you know, very special place. All this is a spring, underground spring, really. We call them Ungud and things like that. And so, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a bit difficult doing that. It's not easy to get out, back out to the homelands with.
No, at the moment I just only got a car problem, but yeah, I'll
fix it up.
Yeah.
Was that because of the flood?
Yeah, flood, and had a bit of problem with my old Truby, the alternator, and starter motor, I tell you, and that night.
Doesn't move far with those problems.
Yeah.
So, speaking of the flood then, how is country? How are you seeing it? How it's been impacted by the incredible floods that have come through here?
Well, this was the biggest flood we had, and... In years, this was in January. You see that bank over there?
Yeah.
That was only this year.
It's amazing. I'll include photos for listeners, but just cut away, isn't it?
Yes, and it's still making it wide because straight across there, we're looking for a fig tree used to be there.
Really?
We used to come here every Saturday from the mission with the old Austin and walk across there. And the fig tree used to be on the other side, but nothing, a big one.
It's gone.
It's gone, yeah. We used to climb up the tree and get all the figs sometimes when they're ripe, you know? Yeah, it's gone.
And how are the springs?
Well, when I went to that one yesterday, that is still springing today.
It's okay?
Yeah.
And I've heard of some others that were filled in because of all the sand that came through.
Yeah.
And that makes you really worried.
Yeah.
And how are you seeing the trajectory, I suppose, as these floodwaters get higher and higher and those climate events? How do you feel about those circumstances?
It's hard, but like I say, where there's just two lots of things, I see it, you know, the science and things like that, but to work with the Aboriginal people along the communities and don't want to take over, but say this is a suggestion.
Mm.
Maybe we can work together with some kind of thing about, because it's some of the trees I see now already flowering, but they used to be back at September.
Yeah.
When you look at the bohino tree, you'll see that already got flower, but they used to be in September, and thinking, how can we work with that? And if the science got there, because that when they were working with my elders, most of the, they were working with, was taking most of the knowledge away from the elders, and some of them were using it for their own benefit and never gave back to the people, and that's what I wanted to see, if we can come back and get some, what you call it, anthropologists and things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They took most of the information away from the elders and never come back again.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it'd be a good idea if we can work something together with it and see, yeah.
Is that changing?
No, I'd like to see it change, come back and dig and,
Yeah, here's to that.
Yeah. See, we still use the old, this one here, this is a fresh mango tree, see? This one?
Is it really?
A freshwater mangrove?
Huh.
This my elders used to stun the fish with.
Really?
No fish line, but they cut them in foot in length.
Yeah.
And when the pool go down, they hit the bark and the sap go in the water and stun the fish. In about 2 hours time, you see the fish you want is floating on top. Just get enough. And within the next 2 hours, they react back to normal.
Really?
And that bark is good for sore, like scabby and things. You clean that in one hit. You boil it up, it's red, like the old, you know, they had the old red and purple drop they put on the sauce. And this one got real red, and then clean the scabby in 2 days, it's all gone. Yeah,
the knowledge here. You were saying before, actually, you're seeing a lot of potential to develop bush food enterprises and things.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about that. What do you imagine is possible?
Well, especially in my old community days, when I was a kid, we used to live off the land. We never come here to Fitzroy. My dad used to, we just had tent, you know, made by R.M. Williams at the time. Huh. Those tents were really tough.
Yeah.
Like roof on.
Yeah.
Rain coming, really, yeah. And we just live off the land. We used to just live off the land. And we know what season to go and on the time, but now seeing most of the thing going, but I like to see, and if the government really very serious about helping remote communities, and this is what I want to say. I want to go back there, do some fishing with the freshwater mangrove, and when we call baranga, when it come baranga, hot weather, the water sort of dry up and go in the pool of water, and then we can want to try this and take some scientists with me, and maybe, I don't know, just if they're interested in this, and then grow some veggies. In my little community, I had beautiful veggie garden and
really
everything, watermelon, but I had to go to tourism, and I had to get my name in the in the business, you know, how it like, and I found out that, you know, if you miss one thing with business, you're gone. And that's why I said to my people, I hope you enjoy, the most thing is weeding. And that's the hardest thing. But why I'm said with veggie garden, I grew up here at the mission. We had about 400 or 500 kids with us. And the elders was working with the missionaries at that time. But we had a beautiful choke farm, veggie garden, pigsty with the pigs, and everything we had. And that's what I want to try to call back.
Yeah, that's interesting, that you're sort of like, there's the best of both worlds there that you're holding in your mind too, hey? The best of what the mission had.
Yeah.
And the best of what you grew up with.
Yeah, and then I want to try to get some. I was talking to Chris Mob, trying to just have maybe start a little fishery there with freshwater charamba, black brim, because I'm in England. Maybe freshwater mussel, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Enough for the thing, yeah. Because some of them, when we lose a loved one, my people, they just have fish and black-eyed python when we lose a loved one, yeah.
Oh, wow.
They don't eat meat for months, even year, you know?
Really?
Hmm. Just to respect our loved one gone. You know?
Yeah. Hmm. With your business, with Bunguli Tours, I guess this started with a similar sort of idea. You thought, I've got this idea to take people on country, invite them in, share culture.
Yeah.
Then how did you make it happen?
Well, I met the most successful tour business now is Kimberly Wild. And I met James and Jenny at the back of Tunnel Creek. Oh, this was about 30-odd years ago. And I just was talking to him. And he said, I'd like to come to your country. And then we had them coming there. And yeah, and now they're worldwide now. Yeah, and like I was saying, this is building the relationship. Now they're operating out at Mimbi now, and that's going real well. And I've stepped back from my tour and just want to go back to my community and work with a troublesome kid in here, in town, and give them some kind of hope and just go and have a look. And I'm working with also, hopefully with Urimele, Urimele school, they're going to bring some kid and do some working in the Kimberley, like working in the gardening, and then 1 or 2 days we take them out river fishing and show them rock art and things like that. Have a bit of everything,
And will you teach them about business too, like how they can start their own things?
Yeah, you know, because most of them are telling them, tell them how I've started up with and using people. Well, I've always mentioned Petrine, because he's the one who helped me a lot and working with setting up a stepping stone and things like that.
Yeah. That was our guest in episode 106, last time we were in the Kimberley, who sits right beside us now, Petrine.
Yeah.
What would you say was, I mean, you mentioned relationships before. I wonder if you'll just say the same thing again, but what would you say is the main thing that made Bunguli Tours work?
A commitment. I know it's very hard, but like I said, it's a commitment, and you're going to be there from day one to, you know, when you know your client got to be coming out. And I picked that up myself, and I'll be there 2 o'clock. I used to go there 1:30, and half an hour early, and that's what kept me going, is my commitment and things like that. And this is what I want to tell my people who are saying it, you know. It's a commitment, and you're going to be there from day one. Yeah.
You're looking really healthy, and we talked a bit before off air that you cut the grog in your 20s.
Yeah.
So you seem to have this understanding about commitment way back then.
Yeah.
Did that come from your old man?
Yes, my old man was very strict, but very, very strict and thing. And well, like I said before, I thought I just drank for fun of it. And you know, when we were out on the station, we worked for months at booths and come in here, especially just for 1 hour's pub. And we thought it was just joke. And guess what? You wouldn't believe, you know, all them spirit on top of on the bar, you know?
Yeah.
We mixed them up in the jug and drank that, and we were out. With all my schoolmates, but now I'm And we thought they were a great joke, you know. Just punch them up. And yeah, we're out for the thing. And yeah, but all my schoolmates have left me. They're gone.
Really?
Sad. I still don't like to talk about it much, you know, yeah. Because they're all gone.
And
wow. Like I said, I was really, because it was destroying me. My life, and then I said, this got to be done somewhere. And sometimes when you're drinking, especially when you're a local, you know the old Slim Dusty?
Yeah.
The local, not welcome with the local mob, you know?
Yeah.
You're not welcome with the local mob. Well, this pub, you know, I could really, you know, bring a lot of memory there and things, yeah.
Mm.
And things like that, and sometimes they just come and pick on you.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Speaking of relationships that you mentioned earlier too, there was a big front page spread in the Broome Advertiser a few weeks ago about plunging crime rates, that crime rates are really dropping with youth across Fitzroy Crossing, across the valley, and that it was all based on relationships and trust between all the different, between police certainly, but all the different, so it's more evidence. And you've seen this happen too, like you've seen that change?
Yeah, slowly, yeah.
But yeah.
This was worse. They got cars and everything, but some were hobby going down, you know.
Yeah, it was bad. Last time we were here, there were signs around town saying, look out for this, look out for that. But not this time.
No. And you've got to keep communicating together and working, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hopeful. Because I think about some of the challenges that people are finding still in Derby, for example, where we're based.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I see here, and even there's some stories coming out of Balgo right now where they're finding a way.
That's and good, yeah.
Part of it's taking kids back on country too.
Yeah.
You see that effect as well?
Yes.
What do you see when your own mob's out in homelands? What changes in people?
Well, they really like to hear from when you take them to your particular area about, like, connection with the land, and then telling them about the culture and thing. And but the most important, I talk to them when we come back, is about education as well as, you know.
Mm.
We need our young kids to step up for education, sports and thing. Yeah, I hope they can really think. But I got two of my great grandson at Wangata now going to school there from here. And they're a brilliant kid, they're really. And hopefully, you know, they are longer than I keep telling them, keep talking to them about education and as well as culture, you know.
Mm. Is there anything in particular that you think, I mean, you mentioned the support Patreon gave you in your journey with the enterprise and so forth. Is there anything from the outside, what other people, government, whatever, can do to help you help your community?
Well, like I think that's, especially with my, I'm talking widely along, it's that with the, most of my countrymen got cattle stations, see? And I like to see the government come in with some kind of article that can fit the station managers and the TO to work together with that and have a plan for further development, you know. But when I was telling you about how much a cow can produce, the calf, and all that, we haven't got that. Even about a horse, you know, a female horse to produce foal and things, and look after that, you know. I love horses, and yeah, I had most of horse, I had and things like that, and come in with some kind of project that can work for both. And I know when most of my countrymen was getting station back, most of the station manager left. The station broken down.
Yeah.
And some of them without water.
Yeah, so this boss, was with Native Title adjudications.
Yeah.
That knowledge lift. Yeah, we'll wait for that one, eh? That's a big one.
And if the government can come and say, look, come to each of the stations and say, you people interested in plumbing, you people interested in mechanic, diesel mechanical, we got a parcel here that for the communities, right? And come up with that, and we really need that, even with tourism and team, how to set up your business. I'm not very qualified when between gone. Well, I'm still left with to do my books and thing, you know?
Yeah.
And things like that. But we got tapes there. I was talking about it before, and there's nothing there about teaching my younger one about, I can't even use internet or something, you know? I want to learn about it.
You do?
Yeah, and things like that, you know? Just have a bit of knowledge about it.
So you can teach an old dog new tricks.
Yeah, you can, no.
You know,
it's the old jungle saying, you can't.
You know, we were talking about the power of vision. How important has it been for you to have a vision about what you're trying to achieve?
It's very important, very important to you. And at least you'll hang on to it, you know. And that's what I've been having. Even though I was working in the tourism, but I wanted to do something for my community and my people.
Is that something that you suggest to others as well? That they develop a vision to guide them?
Yes.
Are people good at that? Or is that something we need to work out a bit?
Yeah, we need to work with that, even with my, you know, my people, especially the elders knew where they were coming from. And some of the desert mob. See, my mother come from the Kenny Sopwood, well, 48, and my grandfather was a tribal leader. He was a Featherfoot. And the old majority people, they know more about it. If you go there to one of this, my family there at Mullen, you'll be surprised when they know all about this. Right back to Fitzroy. And the song line go all the way from here, try through to my areas, Gunningard, a very special place from here. You go from Bunuba, Gunian, Walmingeri, Walbury, and end up at Uluru. And that's when you're talking about the vision, the elders already had that. And I reckon they still got it, you know, but most of them are slowly losing it, but they're teaching the younger men about, even about the, everything.
And recording it too, hey, in things like this.
Yeah. But especially at a place called Kalak, I think they think. And how the young men gonna grab it, you know? They have to grab it and really hold on it. Yeah.
There's like a depth of listening to country, would you say?
Listening and then keep, you know, adjourning it in your heart and things like that, even with a song and thing. But I think most of the younger men are, well, especially I can talk about old majority more because I used to go to many law business and I've seen my young old majority leaders, young men, they were really strong with it, and especially from that area when I was telling you, Malan, Gurungu, all that area, coming down here to Law Shimini, and they really, really got the grasp of it.
Is this something that's in us all, would you say? Is this something that the people that come to you from white fellow culture to listen and be on country with you, that we have too?
Yeah, when you get you can grab that feeling when you're coming to to Aboriginal culture. Yeah, I've seen many came to me and told me we had that feeling about this, what I'm going to tell you about Murungut. Murungut is a little people, and we got a little hill there called, on the map it's called Perry's Hill. It's Breedy. And it's the home of the little people. That's where they came to my father and took him on a spiritual journey. and taken through to Millawindi, up to Matalian. That's all Bunuma country, and saw him how the land river was formed. Iminji, the spring there, Iminji, not the Kimberley, but the Wungur.
Okay.
And at Gululu, all Millawindi station, and right down to, when he went down to follow the Leonard River, and that Leonard River go to meet the Indian Ocean, but this other one come, they said, we're going to go back to our area, to the Oscar Range called Elimbiri Ongut, and there's a water is coming out from the rock, and things like that, and this all the Murungut stay there, Murungut thing, yeah. And we can feel it when they sing it and thing, and I know you have to have that proper spiritual connection with it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like it's essential. Yeah. You talked about us coming together as Australia. Yeah. It feels like that's an essential part.
Yeah.
So there's an invitation to more people to yeah. come and join.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned singing into it.
Yeah. I'll try this one. This is my... This junwa from my father about the Murungut now, when I was telling you about the little people taking on a spiritual journey and about the tooth place now, I was telling you. Jinjinjara Murungut Mindy, Jinjinjara Murungut Mindy, Jinjinjara Murungut Mindy, Jinjinjara Murungut Mindy, Jinjinjara Murungut Mindy. Jinjin jaram rung god mendi, jinjin jaram rung god mendi, jinjin jaram rung god mendi, elimbiri murung 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 god mendi. Jinjin jaram rung god mendi, 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 jinjin jaram rung god mendi.
Yeah, geez, I was feeling that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jimmy, it's been an absolute privilege speaking to you. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on country.
Thank you for that, yeah.
That was highly respected Bunuba elder and founder of Bunguli Tours, Jimmy Dylan Andrews. For more on Jimmy, Bunguli Tours, and how you can continue to support the community at Fitzroy Crossing, see the links in the show notes. I've put some photos on the episode webpage too. And yes, later on Jimmy and I did talk about the Voice to Parliament referendum happening next month here in Australia. He talked about how bitten many people are up here still with the dismantling of ATSIC, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission, back in the 90s. They fear it happening again. And that, of course, is the idea, at least, behind the referendum, that by instituting it in the Constitution, they need not fear that anymore. And how I wish for that. The possibilities to explore together, fearlessly, are just so needed and so rich. And speaking of rich, the Reconnection Festival is just weeks away now in the Northern Rivers of New South Wales. It'll feature Zac Bush, Charles Eisenstein, virtually, and a range of brilliant artists, performers and other Aussies in conversation with each other, and me as MC. Podcast subscribers, you get a 10% discount. See my last post on Patreon for the discount code. And if you donate to the podcast, just send me a message and I can send you the discount code too. Subscribers also get behind-the-scenes footage, photos and other things as we get around the country. So if you've been thinking about becoming a subscriber, I'd love you to join us. It's with thanks as always to this community of generous supporters that this episode was made possible. Just head to the website via the show notes, regeneration.com/support. And thanks again. Thanks also for sharing the podcast when you think of someone who might enjoy it, and for continuing to rate and review the podcast on your favourite app. It all helps. The music you're hearing is Regeneration by Amelia Barden, off the soundtrack to the film Regenerating Australia. My name's Anthony James. Thanks for listening.
I like the old Chillum Dusty.
You do? Yeah, yeah.
The old country western rock.
If you were to pick your favourite song of Slim Dusty, which one would it be?
The Old Bushmate of Mine. You know that one?
Yeah.
There's a far off distant valley where the Nullar moon shines bright.
So good.
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? Like, he's still so loved.
He is. Dearly loved, yeah.
He's still more than, you know, Troy, Cassie Daly, but I'll sell him, like, still more than, you know, everybody loves.
So. Oh, legend.
Yeah. Mm.